With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, title race latest. Salah on fire. Jurgen Klopp is terrified. Arsenal seeing off spirited Spurs. City at Forest looking a bit like John Terry, a long way from their usual class. We discuss all the latest developments coming up on a weekend that saw the Premier League bid goodbye to the Blades, but will ensure the Toffees stick around for another season. It's the Totally Football Show. Sunday the 28th of April. Hello, listener. Today's show features Adrian Clark. Hi, Adrian.
Hello, everybody.
You're just back from the Emirates.
I am, yeah.
North London Derby was being played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
It was, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, we did the studio show from Emirates, and I clocked up some miles in that final 15 minutes. I couldn't sit or stand still.
No.
I just paced up and down the studio, but we got the job done.
Excellent. I'm sure you did. Also here today, JJ Ball. All right, JJ.
Hello.
Were you pacing?
No, I was sat here with producer Charlie, who's very, very enthralled by the game. Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Kept it neutral for him.
Yeah, and North London Derby is going to be a big, big talking point today. And Charlie Eccleshare was actually there at the right ground and everything. At Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It was, a strange game.
Well, it was a strange game. Loads of talking points. Other big things we'll be discussing today include City Forest, of course, the ongoing meltdown with Liverpool. I should imagine what Burnley got up to. Set piece gurus as well. What a season for the set piece guru. What's Arsenal's fellow called?
Nicolas Jover.
There you go.
Yeah, you need to rise that guy.
He got a lot of coverage. A lot of coverage today. Anyway, that's because two of the three goals that Arsenal scored against Spurs in the NLD came from set pieces. The other, a Bukayo Saka breakaway in what turned out to be a 3-2 victory for the Gunners. City, shortly afterwards on Sunday afternoon, winning 2-0 against a wasteful Nottingham Forest. Saturday lunchtime in the early slot, Liverpool drop points again meanwhile. 2-2 at West Ham, meaning they are now 5 points off the lead. Elsewhere, Newcastle's 5-1 win over Sheffield United sent the Blades down, but on the plus side, it equaled the Premier League record for aggregate home and away wins over the same opponent. Everton's 1-0 win over Brentford, meanwhile, their third straight victory confirmed that, PSR be damned, they are staying up. Also this weekend, we had Wolves beating Luton 2-1. Man United against Burnley, which saw the struggling side getting an unexpected point, and Burnley were also happy with the 1-1 draw. There were draws for Villa and Chelsea. Chelsea coming back from two goals down at Villa, and also for Fulham and Palace. And those stripy figures residing on Brighton Beach these days are De Zerbi's boys. Their latest result, a 3-0 loss to Bournemouth. Wow, all right. Round 35, everyone. And as promised, we begin with Tottenham Arsenal.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
God's corner this time, and it's glanced in! Kai Havertz makes it 3-0! And this is turning into a dream day for Arsenal.
Yeah, that was the view at half-time when Arsenal was 3-0 up. But of course, things took a very different complexion in the second half. Adrian, you were saying about how nervous you were.
Yeah, it was a strange game because Arsenal were 3-0 up at half-time and it was a mediocre performance, really, by Arsenal standards. I think so, yeah. Like, they started off the game okay, but they didn't really handle Tottenham's press particularly well. Great counter-attacking goal from Bukayo Saka. Two lovely set pieces. But in general play, I think they allowed Tottenham to control the match. And that wouldn't have been part of the game plan. I think what they needed to do was get hold of the ball and dictate. And that's what they did at the start of the second half. And at that point, for me, Tottenham were broken.
Right.
They'd stopped pressing. They'd given up. I think the fans were about 5 minutes away from exiting the ground. And
instead,
then David Raya
makes that David Raya.
Yeah, he makes that big mistake. And from that moment on, you knew what was coming.
All right.
And it turned into an unnecessarily interesting game.
So Spurs look good in the first half, Charlie, from your perspective, but go behind to the Højbjerg own goal. And then Christian Romero should have had a couple.
Yeah.
Should have equalised. Mickey van der Ven thinks he's equalised, but somebody's backside, his backside was in the wrong place. And then it was Arsenal, while sundry Spurs players lolled around in the Arsenal penalty box looking for a penalty. The Gunners busied themselves up the other end, scoring a fabulous breakaway move with Bukayo Saka, and all of a sudden it's 2-0.
Yeah, I think you could definitely make a case that Spurs played better in a first half in which they lost 3-0 than a second in which they won 2-0. It was really odd. I mean, I would agree with Adrian. Like, at that point, the stadium was getting pretty sleepy at about 65 minutes whenever the goal went in. Like, it really felt like it was just drifting away from them. The strange thing is that Raya's goal completely changed the game in that it was suddenly a contest, but it wasn't as if Spurs then created loads straight after. You know, and then they got the penalty again as the game was kind of drifting away. So obviously it became very nervous, but they didn't create much beyond just putting crosses into the box. Whereas in the first half, they did create some really good chances. I mean, mainly from set pieces. But even so, I thought Arsenal looked a bit nervy. And, you know, that defence is normally so strong. But I thought in the first half, you know, in the period between their first and second in particular, it really felt like an equaliser was coming. But they just about got it done.
Arsenal's goal celebrations.
Mm.
So instead of a player individually celebrating and then perhaps joining his teammates for some piling on or whatever they might like to do, they went round and got almost in a kind of Steven Gerrard-esque huddle and discussed something very intensely, not just after the first goal, but after the second, and I think the third as well. What was going on in there?
They've done this before. They did it last season a bit as well.
Is this a celebration police reaction?
I think it's the sort of thing that if you're a fan, you love. If you're not, you think is ostentatious bull. Because it's kind of like there is something a
what
bit.
What do you think, Charlie?
I think there's a bit there's something of the Pep about it. You know how Pep after City of One will still be berating his players because we have standards that are so high. Like I feel there's a bit of
well,
that.
You think
like
that's what the chat's about.
I think it's a little bit of like, you know, just because we've scored, we switch on and like, you know, you really concentrate now.
Right. Ben White was giving, I think, the second one. I'm not sure if he always does it.
I think there's a doo-wop song. Right. So in between each one, they're all coming, ooh, just keep it calm.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
I'd like to think that's the case.
So, yeah, and that was 3-0 at half time. And then, as you mentioned, Adrian, David Raya with that. So what was going through David Raya's mind? For anyone who didn't see it, could you describe the dynamic of this incident?
He receives the ball. For some reason, Christian Romero is running directly towards him.
Really fast.
Really fast, yeah. There's something like he's been let loose out of the zoo and he's just going to come for you, you know?
It's like a kid playing FIFA and it's like, what are you doing? Why are you just running forward with this player?
Or a Labrador seeing the beach for the first time.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was, yeah. So Romero's seen the beach for the first time. He's bounding towards him. Raya sees it, doesn't know what to do. And I don't know whether he's not had enough of the ball, he's not had enough touches to really know what he's doing with it, but he tries to chip it maybe over him and instead hits it directly to him, which then Romero finishes it quite nicely, sends him the wrong way, puts it into the corner. That's lovely. That seemed to give him a bit of a fire. And then Richarlison was there as well, also running around like he's just been put into the zoo and is just running around trying to destroy things.
He had just come on, so that he could, you know, he had that energy. I mean, it looks very much like
that wild card energy. You need sometimes.
Yeah, looks very much like Raya gets caught between two ideas. Yeah. Mm. Like, you know, he has one thing in mind, then he changes, and in the end, just, you know, does neither. Yeah.
He recovered well. Like Spurs put some balls in the box, and he came out and claimed them. He didn't have a save to make in the whole game. The two shots on target that Spurs had were resulted in goals. So, but I think in generally he got his head together because that was a moment that that could have sort of engulfed him.
He's had some practice, of course. One of the reasons, I guess, that you and Arsenal fans were quite nervous was that not only Richarlison was bringing energy, but Spurs just seemed to have an extra gear at this point compared to Arsenal. What do the running stats tell us, Adrian?
Well, look, Spurs had 2 weeks off. And I think it showed in the second part of the second half, Arsenal were definitely tiring. I also think the game state impacted Arsenal. You know, you're suddenly more tired when you're looking, you go into protection mode, or you certainly look more tired. But as it happens, Arsenal still ran, I think, 1.5 kilometres further than Spurs in the game.
Oh, yeah.
In the previous two games, by the way, Arsenal ran 6K further than Chelsea and 6K further than Wolves. This Arsenal team.
Is that always a good
graft,
thing?
I think it is a good thing in general. Mm. Because,
well, I think it is when you're the superior talent. When you've got the superior talent, if you're matching that with that kind of industry, it's not enough in and of itself.
I can imagine if you were, say, Burnley playing Man City, you might run a lot more than them.
But yeah, you're chasing it around.
I think with Arsenal, they press very enthusiastically.
Right.
But I think the key with this team and what's taken us to the next level is the off-the-ball movement.
Right.
It is, the players are working really hard to help each other when they have the ball, and I think Havertz is someone that really typifies that.
Erdegaard,
of course, but Havertz for me was Arsenal's best player here.
I
just thought he was a great outlet for the team. I think he held the ball nicely,
scored
made great
a lovely,
runs, scored a lovely header.
Arteta was gushing about him after.
Was he? Okay, yeah,
yeah. Was,
it was a sensational pass for Saka, of course, on that counter attack. I thought he stood out head and shoulders above any other Arsenal player on the day. I think that the defence cope well with these good set pieces from Spurs, like by and large. But I think in general play, Havertz was superb.
Okay. Mm. JJ, you did a lovely video for The Athletic FC on how far Ange Postecoglou can take Spurs, you know, when he gets into his second season of that. Yeah. What did you draw from their performance in this game?
I think they're playing against an Arsenal team who, I think, make games, I mean this in a nice way, but it'll sound bad, make games quite boring because they have so much control of it. They're really slow and they're not as fun to watch as, say, like Man United at the moment, for example, for wholly different reasons. But I think this is one of the first games I've seen Arsenal play this season where they haven't had absolute control, and it's very hard to work out. Like, trying to analyse this game from any sort of tactical point is quite hard because nothing really happened. It was just that Arsenal somehow managed to get three goals up and then it just didn't really make sense as to what was going on there. I think Spurs will need to build on what Postecoglou is doing by adding one or two big signings per transfer window.
Okay.
That's how they'll do it. It's just as basic as that for me, I think.
Just on that, he said after the game that they need more Romero. He needs to get more Romero and the other players, because it was basically put to him that Romero was outstanding, but maybe no one else was. And I think
especially
that
midfield,
was
the case
today.
I'd say they're really missing that kind of.
They need legs in midfield.
There.
I mean, playing a Postecoglou team, you need energy.
Yeah.
And I think that they don't have enough of that.
The fact they were starting Højbjerg in this game is pretty damning on Basuma's form.
And the pace at the back, obviously, you've got two very quick centre halves in Van de Ven and Romero. It's the backup that Tottenham definitely lead. Some quick backups, also in the fullback departments, someone that can cover Udogi and Porro and fit in with the style. Central midfield, and I think striker is the obvious one. They still haven't really replaced Harry Kane.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone into a season without Harry Kane and didn't buy an out and out striker other than Alejo Veliz, who's a youngster who's out on loan. But I mean, Adrian, you saw it, you've seen it with Arsenal. I think, you know, the more you can kind of cleanse is quite a harsh word, but like get rid of the players who aren't really that well suited, the more your squad is players who you, the manager, have brought in because you think they're suited to your football. Like, you know, Arteta had the same thing. There were players knocking around season two, even maybe last season, where it's like they are just not quite at the level. He's only in his first season. I think he just need, you know, another big summer transfer window.
Well, not just depth. Like, is
exactly. His first team is
good.
Enough. But yeah, it's those, can they, you know, rather, so they're not bringing in Ben Davis, Emerson Royale, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. They're bringing in players Ange really, really wants and thinks can play that system.
How much would not making top four and thus Champions League impact their ability to bring in those players?
It does make a difference that, you know, both financially, but also the
attractiveness of the destination.
I mean, Spurs signed 7 players last summer. One of them was playing Champions League football, and he was at Shakhtar, Manuel Solomon, and obviously there's a different context there. So I think that's quite revealing. And generally, the players they did sign, they weren't competing with Champions League clubs. Inevitably, it just makes it that much harder. It's still possible, but obviously it just makes it a lot easier when you're in the Champions League and have the Champions League money.
They are currently 7 points behind Aston Villa, who lie fourth. Spurs, though, do have 2 games in hand, one of which is against Man City. Mm. Man City, who straight after the North London derby on Sunday afternoon, went to the City Ground to take on Nottingham Forest. And this, you won't have seen much of this, Charlie. You're on your way back from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So Adrian, what did Charlie miss?
Missed a really competitive match, actually. I thought it was surprisingly...
Did he miss as much as Chris Wood missed?
No. I mean, Chris Wood missed a lot. he missed everything as far as Arsenal supporters are concerned. He was a bit leaden-footed at key moments, Chris Wood, and that really was costly for Nottingham Forest. I thought their build-up play was great. The wingers were flying down the sides. You know, it was 2v1s, especially down the left with Elanga and Ola Aina. And they caused City probably more problems than I've seen most teams cause Manchester City. It was just wasteful finishing. And then, of course, they bring Haaland off the bench and he seals it with a really nice goal, actually. He sort of stops and starts the defender in the 1v1. So, yeah, look, Forest can take heart from their performance, but it's not done, you know, it's not done them any good. And it's as you were in terms of the title race.
Yeah. Still to come for City, you've got Wolves, that's next Saturday at the Etihad. Then they're away at Fulham. Then the trip to Spurs on the 14th of May. And we all know their record away to Tottenham. They host a West Ham on the final weekend of the season. JJ, you went down to Brighton on Thursday on a game which kind of came just after our last Totally Football show when they put four past Brighton with barely a glimmer of resistance.
Yeah, it looked really, really simple. The thing I noticed, it's the first time I've seen this team play in real life, I think, Man City.
Mm-hmm.
Only ever on TV. They're all massive. They're all so big. And you know, like Rodri, as I said earlier, looks like someone's inside him controlling him in a human suit.
Right.
really big people.
He's a big bully, isn't he, Rodri? Yeah. I mean, he's just... bigger and stronger than everyone.
It's funny as well, watching this game, because like De Zerbi is meant to be the tactical genius, but like there was all these huge spaces open for Brighton to attack all the time, and then they started like it's almost like Guardiola was leaving them open in particular in the flanks, which is exactly where Nottingham Forest attacked them today. Actually, and it's probably linked, but they just couldn't take advantage of anything. Couldn't keep the ball. As soon as the ball got pinged forward, João Pedro, normally really good, lost the ball.
Right,
couldn't keep it. They looked so good. Even the warm up, I was loving watching that.
What did you like about the warm-up?
Well, like, you can sometimes see things in real life that you can't see on the TV, as these guys both know, because he goes to games all the time. I never go to games. But, like, players carry themselves in different ways. Like, De Bruyne acts like a coach in warm-ups. Like, in training drills, he walks around, like, back out and chest forward, and he walks around and passes with, like, real venom every single pass. And he was pinging these balls in the top corner, just, like, it didn't even matter to him. Every single time, he was pinging it in so clean, technique's amazing. Oh, it's amazing watching them. You're like, this is so cool watching football games where you get to see this quality. Because it's not what I used to have watching growing up in Aberdeen, you know.
No, but I mean,
it is better here.
Did you do any diving headers in the warm-up?
Yeah, they're all diving headers, yeah.
What a header from Kevin De Bruyne.
I love diving
headers. Shades of Robin Van Persie at the
very
World
much,
Cup.
So, yeah. But, so, Adrian, sorry.
Yeah, for all of their brilliance in this game, that you know, Forest...
The game against Forest? Yeah. What does the XG tell us?
Well, the XG... City had under one and City had over 1.5.
The first half, you mentioned it was 0.25 for City and 1.5 for Forest.
So in the end, it was something similar in terms of the disparity, but Forest were way ahead of City. And it's a set piece that effectively sort of gives them the advantage. I think it was a set piece Sunday, wasn't it? They were good set piece deliveries. I thought Declan Rice's one in the derby was perfection. This cross was brilliant as well.
Right.
And it occurred when Williams was off injured. And they were saying on TV that Forrest should have made a sub before the corner was taken.
Right.
So they had always being told to never do that. There are times to do that.
Yeah, so they were a man down.
You're not supposed to, if you're taking the
No, if you're defending is always the thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, right.
But in this example... Do when you're a man down.
Yeah, exactly. if you know that he's got to come off anyway, hold play up and get that sub on. They paid a heavy price for that.
They did, didn't they?
2.07 XG, Forrest.
How much, sorry?
2.07 for Forrest, 0.89 for City.
Yeah, that's big difference.
Yeah, but one team got two goals, the other got none. The first of City's two goals coming from Josco Guardiol, who has now scored three goals in his last five matches, which is kind of remarkable because you recall the first of them came in the Champions League. And prior to that, he hadn't scored 395 days. Now he can't stop.
Well, I think we're seeing the next version of Guardiola. Like, Guardiola changes his tactics every single year. They always evolve. And I think I've read him saying that Guardiola's just in the team. He doesn't want to start doing the John Stones thing with him yet, the Akanji thing, where they both go into midfield. But I think you're starting to see... There was times when Guardiola was the most furthest forward central player. So it might be that he's trying to attack in a different way with the left back and making that a new position, just trying something out.
It is a classic thing though at City where he's like an £80 million defender. Mm. And it's so just like, I mean, that's not talked about because it's just expected. I feel like if United or Liverpool or Arsenal had signed an £80 million defender, I feel like there would have been so much scrutiny on him. As like, they've broken their record for a defender. Like, is this guy up to it? With Pep, they've got so many of these amazing players.
It's almost like they've got a huge amount.
I know, I don't know how they do it.
Way more money than anybody else.
It's incredible.
And they just play him out of position as well. Yeah. He's not a left back, but he's getting better at it.
Pep does, but Ange does that with Romero and everybody calls him a...
Gvardiol played left back for Croatia in the World Cup, didn't he?
Yeah, I like still him think there. He's a centre-half, really.
Probably,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, he's getting away with it.
Maybe he's... both those positions and a forward at the same time now.
Nobody's ever won the top division title in England four seasons in a row. That's what City, currently looking in a fairly good place to do. One little kind of negative bit of news for Pep Guardiola was the fact that Edison had to come off during this game with Ortega replacing him. And what's the prognosis there? What's the news we're hearing there?
I don't know. Do you know, Charlie?
He's left in a... with his arm in a sling.
Which
he banged his shoulder, didn't he? Yeah.
City are one injury away from having to play Scott Carson.
There you go. There you go. All right, well, next up for us, we'll get on to what Liverpool got up to this weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Listener, for us it's boring old 28th of April. Do you remember then? But for you, you're probably listening to this on the 29th of April. And the reason I mention that is that on this day, Charlie, in 1996, this happened.
I think you've got to send Alex Ferguson a tape of this game, haven't you? I mean, that sort of stuff. We're bigger than that.
But that's part and parcel of the psychological battle, Kevin.
No, that's when you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds. And when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that. But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Those are the days.
Yeah. Those are the days.
You get mind games.
Well, this weekend, arguably, we saw If I Speak... replaced as a kind of meme, but I don't think anything will ever.
That's an internal thing, though, is it? That's not him trying to, like, you know, get at Liverpool's opponents.
So this was Mourinho basically owning it, whereas this was a man on television essentially having a bit of a breakdown.
Well, yeah, but more in response to Fergie's mind games. I mean, attributed to the fact that.
So younger Fergie's listeners will be going, "What do you mean mind games?" Because when was the last time anyone did?
No,
mind
I know they're too respectful of one another.
There's too many hugs before matches. Yeah. Like Ange and Arteta look very friendly.
I feel like Guardiola sort of does it, but in a really super nice way.
Yeah, he kills them with kindness.
He praises them. So I think any manager genuinely that he praises goes, "They're so good." And when the first find the spaces, he's basically doing it because he knows they're going to absolutely do them.
Right.
Yeah.
And does that count as mind games?
I think it does because I think, it's one of the options in Football Manager, so yes, it must be. So you can like praise them and then the players think, oh, we're really good, our manager's great. And and De Zerbi suddenly goes, I'll just do the thing I normally do. Guardiola likes it. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Who's the bad guy in the Premier League these days? Who's the sort of meanie?
Stuart Atwell.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking, of course he's not, but... But one of our own is the Luton fans who had a banner this weekend. I don't know. Is there a dark side figure on the bench anywhere in the Premier League?
I don't think there's someone doing, like, Fergie had such an amazing way of
bullying.
Yeah, kind of. Mm. Like, he did. He got, you know, the power he had over referees, over opposition. I mean, he prompted that Rafa Benitez facts rant as well.
Oh, yeah.
He could get inside people's heads in amazing way. I mean, Mourinho's probably the closest we've had since.
Yeah.
If I speak one less so, but he was an amazing wind-up merchant.
Oh, completely.
Like, you know, he knew how to get a rise out of people. Look what he did to, you know, Wenger, who not, you know.
I wonder how much of it he planned as well. Like, things like when he would say things that would instantly change what the narrative in the press was the next day. He would do it so often. Is it because he's heated and he says these things and he's a genius at it, or is he doing it on purpose? Because you even say, purpose. Like, the Klopp stuff where he talks about the 12:30 kickoffs, valid point, but it always comes up to try and distract from something else. It could, maybe that's the sort of thing.
There's that.
Is Klopp the bad guy? I mean, he could be a little...
When he loses, he's really mean to people.
Yeah, he is. I've been on the receiving end of it.
Have you?
Oh, Charlie,
What happened?
It was almost exactly 2 years ago, actually, after a Spurs...
It was almost exactly 2 years ago. I just finished watching Spurs.
Yeah.
Has the therapy just finished?
It was a really weird one. Spurs had just drawn with Liverpool. Right. Big blow for Liverpool in the title race. And Klopp was really annoyed. And not at all in a kind of wind-up way. I just said, how impressed were you with how Spurs defended today? Because they went there. Yeah, they went there and did a real job on them. And my piece happened to be on how good Spurs had defended. So I thought, all right, great. Get some quotes from Klopp. I can slip in at the bottom. And he just went off on one about how that kind of way of playing doesn't impress me. I'm, you know, why are you asking me that question, sort of thing, you know. He was rattled.
How was he after the 2-2 draw Saturday at the London Stadium?
Well, he tried to play down the Salah spat, which unfortunately Salah was less on message.
Yeah. Well, we'll come on to that in a second, but this Jurgen Klopp farewell tour is really going spectacularly badly. In the last just over a month, they've got knocked out of the FA Cup, then out of the Europa League, now pretty much out of the title race, and he's now fallen out with kind of the other biggest name of this whole golden era of his reign, which they only won one Premier League title, but what an incredible team they've been for most of that time.
I think Mo Salah has justification to feel a bit peeved.
Really?
Yeah.
What would they be?
I don't know. After all the moments that he's produced for Liverpool to get left out of
what
a really important
game. No, seriously, because if you're a manager, you've seen the way he's been playing.
Yeah, look, he hasn't been playing as well, but he still gets into great positions. He should have scored. He could easily have scored.
Did you see when Darwin and Nunes, and they bombed down the other end, and did you see the ball that he put in?
Yeah.
About three metres behind the player.
His head isn't right, that's for sure. Yeah.
And his feet aren't right either.
No, that's true.
I'm not down on Salah. I think he's been an amazing player.
Yeah.
But I can totally see why. This wasn't the first game that he's not featured much in the recent run, and his touch is way off for whatever reason.
I think some players need rest, and a lot of managers rotate them. I think you can look at Guardiola as an example of what he does. Is his wide players especially tend to only get about 24 starts in the league, so that each one will only get that. There's certain exceptions, Phil Foden this season, Rodri always plays, but generally he has. In fact, I went through this with Arsenal, it's relevant to Arsenal and the amount of running they do as well. So Arsenal, I think, six of their key players have played over 85% of the available minutes in the Premier League, which is a lot, because Man City have zero that do that. So they rotate them. They have a bigger squad and all that sort of nonsense. But
more money.
Well, it helps, but that's the thing. And so, like, Salah, if he's maybe out of form, maybe give him a rest is a good idea. And
but Salah's always been the player who would never accept
who has just been one of those guys who plays pretty much every game.
He just can't. He's obviously unable to take it.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he hasn't looked right really since he came back from that hamstring injury.
Yeah.
The thing about what he did when he left afterwards, when he's walking past the journalists and he says, "There will be fire if I speak." Because I didn't realise this, but he never gives quotes. He never stops and talks to. So the fact that he did, it wasn't just that he said something off the cuff. He actually decided to drop that in. I think it's only the third time in his time in England that he's actually spoken to reporters even to say a sentence like that.
Do you know, I think there's probably even tactical reasons that he didn't, that he's not happy, because in the last couple of seasons, maybe even this season, I can't remember if it's this season or maybe part of last season, he's starting much wider and much deeper so they can, because they're putting Alexander-Arnold inside the pitch, and so that you obviously have to have the width there. And there's the wide triangles like Szoboszlai, Salah and Alexander-Arnold to an extent, maybe someone else comes along. So Salah's starting much deeper, not getting the ball where he used to, and Salah has been like the top scorer and assistant for Liverpool for years and years, one of the best in the Premier League ever. And so they're not playing him to his strengths, they're playing to the team's strengths rather than getting more out of him. Mm. And it might be that he's now going, how come you're putting Harvey Elliott on in front of me, who never scores or assists at all, but you've got me doing all this work off the pitch, on the pitch, off the ball, that doesn't then translate into what I'm able to do with it. Maybe just a bit of ego. Could be.
Yeah, like, I mean, it feel pointed him not playing, no question. Mm. Because I think even all things being equal, even if Salah's not fully, you know, even if he's a bit jaded, yeah, you want a goal or an assist or a big moment, you're going with him over Harvey Elliott.
I don't know if you are at the moment. I mean, not based on what we saw Wednesday against Everton or in the previous matches against Atalanta.
There's enough kind of history of him doing that that you say, I know you're not in the best form, but you're still getting the chances. You're
I still captained him midweek because he's Mo Salah.
Okay, that's this, so you're...
The scales fell from my eyes then.
28, they didn't play brilliantly, Liverpool, in this game. I think that's fair to say.
I was going
to
say, this Salah's far from being their only issue because they go behind again. Yeah. They're so sloppy at the back.
Very sloppy.
They fail to take their chances, not just Salah, but everybody.
Yeah, so in an attacking sense, they had 28 shots. 23 of them were inside the box.
Wow.
I would argue that if you're having 23 shots inside the box, you want Salah on the pitch. That's how I look at it.
How many were actually on target?
Well, I don't have that to hand. I think 7 or 8. But from a defensive point of view, poor. Gravenbach, I mean, it's another weekend of corners. Gravenbach lets Bowen go at the corner. They're behind. Kwanzaa gets done, doesn't he, by a little bit of movement by Antonio for the second. Yeah, they're too ragged. They've been too ragged for most of the season out of possession, and that's why they're not going to be champions. It's not to do with Salah. No. It's not to do with the attack. They will score enough goals to be champions, but out of possession, they're just not quite good enough.
I said, Adrian, after they... You know that 1-0 win they had at Forest, which was kind of what felt like every game this season where they scored a late winner and it was kind of all crazy. And I said at that time, they reminded me of Arsenal last season.
Yeah.
And that game was the same weekend a year on from Arsenal beating Bournemouth. And in a similar kind of way, it was like, it was both were, certainly the Liverpool one was heralded as a kind of, that's what title winning teams do. And yes, they do occasionally. They don't have to keep doing it. Right? It always felt like, and I, you know, it's not being wise after the event. Compared to City and Arsenal, I always said they'd come third because you can't, that's not how you win titles. City have shown that. You know, you just do it by winning games that people have forgotten about by full time.
Last time I was on this show, I said the exact same thing. And I got battered by some Liverpool fans online. Well, you know, I'm not saying this because I'm being biased.
Yeah.
I'm saying because I would have said the same thing last season about Arsenal. It was too wild. It's just
vindication.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is where, for those people who care about underlying numbers, that is where they can be quite useful because they do often show those things. They're like, maybe you will just keep overperforming indefinitely, but the chances
are... Maybe you'll buy a Leverkusen. The title does look like it's sailed from Liverpool's point of view this time around. As for next season, of course, Jurgen Klopp won't be there. Arne Slot will. Handily enough, Charlie, you've written a piece or co-written a piece on The Athletic all about what Arne Slot represents in terms of football, which we'll come on to in a second. But just get a quick word on West Ham, who look good here and yet have only won 4 of the last 22 matches in all competitions. What's anything fresh from West Ham?
It does feel a little bit now. I think since they've gone out of Europe, that was kind of keeping their season alive.
So that was...
Yeah, now it feels... And we've spoken before about Paquetar and how crucial he is. He missed quite a few of those games. He came back, gave them a boost. I think now they're out of Europe, it does all feel a little bit... Like they're just kind of drifting along to the end of the season.
All right then, Arne Slot coming in at Liverpool. That looks pretty much, if not official, then all but. You've written this piece on what Liverpool fans should expect that's on The Athletic. Can you give us the audiobook version?
he's a really exciting appointment. And this, my contribution largely came about from the fact that this time a year ago, I wrote 4,000 words on why Spurs have appointed Arne Slot. Only for those 4,000 words to never see the light of day.
Oh, right.
Until now.
How close were they?
They were pretty close. Yeah. I mean, the point that I was writing, you know, I don't, there aren't many of those where you go to that point where you're like, okay, this is happening.
It's
I'm
beautiful.
Doing
you
it.
You've got pictures in it.
And... yeah, it was yeah. It was great. And I'll never forget the moment when I found out it wasn't happening.
Remind me why it didn't happen. Did he just decide to stay?
He decided to stay. Yeah. It then felt a little bit like, was he using Spurs' interest to get a better contract?
Mm. Oh, I remember you telling me this and how you reacted. Yeah, that's funny.
Fell to the floor. Yeah. But enough about me. This is about Arne Slot.
So, okay, well, having he's, done all of that, he went and won the title last season. Yeah. I mean, this season he's won a Dutch Cup.
Yeah, and they've been, you know, this season PSV have kind of run away with it. But I think he as well wanted to experience European football with Feyenoord properly and that sort of thing. He's a really exciting manager, very attacking, front-footed. I mean, similarities with Postecoglou has, you know, wingers are really important to his system. He's huge on conditioning and that kind of thing, getting players in the best possible shape and giving them...
Not conditioning.
Unfortunately, not in that way. But yeah, kind of working with players to improve their fitness and things like that. There are quite a few examples.
Tactically, how well does he match this Liverpool's squad, or does it need a rebuild? Or
I think it's hard to say. I mean, definitely, I think there are structural issues with this Liverpool squad anyway. I mean, the lack of a really good defensive midfielder was one of the reasons I always thought they wouldn't win the league, and so that's something he's got to address. I think, you know, generally Klopp has played in a very front-footed kind of way, and so in that sense there's definite continuity. And you know, he's a very good man manager. He's great at kind of empowering the players, similar to Postecoglou in some ways. I can see why, you know, if Spurs wanted Slot, they then went for Postecoglou. The main thing when I was speaking to people in Holland all those many months ago about Arne Slot, which they said then, and then checking in with them again now, was can he come in and do such a big job? And I don't want to patronise him having been in the Eredivisie, but you know, taking over from Jurgen Klopp is a big ask, whoever it is. So, you know, will he be able to have as much kind of power and authority as he had at Feyenoord with Liverpool? And does he have the personality? Because Klopp, it's not just his connection with the club, but it's the whole city and everything. Like, he really, he's this kind of messianic figure. So, yeah, be interesting. Yeah. But he's, I think, just football-wise, looks like a really, really good appointment.
But he certainly seems like a really good appointment in the article. My favourite comment underneath it, though, was the person who wrote in, "I'm old enough to remember articles like this about Ten Hag a couple of years ago." Is there any danger?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, from a football point of view, perspective, you can be a brilliant coach. You could be one of the best coaches on the planet. Mm. But to manage a club like Liverpool, that alone won't cut it.
Liverpool
Football Club. You, like Manchester United, you've got to... You could easily get out of your depth. Mm. And I think that's what we're seeing with Erik ten Hag, with everything that comes around the football. It's impacted his ability to improve the team. So that's the big question mark. I'm pretty surprised they've gone there. Yeah.
A little bit underwhelmed, do you?
No, I'm not underwhelmed, but I just think to take Liverpool to the next level, they might have gone with someone more experienced. But
there's quite a fine line, isn't there, between managers who have the sort of gravitas and experience you're describing that aren't busted flushes?
Yeah.
You know, like, who, you know, because, you know, a few years ago, we're probably saying it's got to be a Mourinho, you know, someone with that personality. But
the one that springs to mind for me is Tuchel. I know that he can be difficult to work with, but he has got the charisma and the broad enough shoulders to handle a Manchester United or Liverpool job, and he's obviously got the track record.
He might be a bit too reactive. Like, that's when his teams are often best. I don't know if that would best suit.
But
this
team. It just surprised me a little that a Liverpool or Manchester United haven't been linked more strongly with Tuchel.
Or maybe they have. Maybe they have. No, the Tuchel Man United idea is that's not something that's in entirely new, but Liverpool certainly don't seem to have gone that way. Ruben Amorim was the other name who was on their books. But did that all fall apart because he took a meeting with West Ham?
I don't think that chronology. I mean, you'd think he must have started those talks with West Ham once he had a pretty good sense he wasn't going to get the Liverpool job,
right?
Like, why would you do anything to sabotage
that
job?
Indeed
does
not.
The fact that he's apologised for it mean that he's not going to West Ham? Or
no, I think he's not going to West Ham.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Yeah, you know what? We'll see in the next few weeks. That'll be a nice little sideshow alongside the other questions of the season finale. Next up, we'll talk a bit about Aston Villa and Ten Hag's Man United and all sorts of other stuff too.
We're all driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Full-Time Europe, The Athletic's women's football podcast, is out now. It's already out. The reason that it is already out is that they actually recorded it on Saturday at Stamford Bridge at the second leg of that Women's Champions League semi-final with Barcelona, which of course saw the Catalans coming back from that 1-0 defeat in the first leg away in Catalonia to win 2-1 on aggregate. All sorts of Chelsea unhappiness over refereeing decisions. Emma Hayes, who's kind of having a Klopp-like one in this kind of end of regime that she's having, as their various targets get whittled away one by one, called anyway the decision to send off Kadesha Buchanan the worst decision in Women's Champions League history. Which is bold. We'll get the take off Full-Time Europe on that, straight away, because as I say, it's out right now. The other Champions League, the one with men in it, will be returning meanwhile on Tuesday with Bayern against Real Madrid and PSG Dortmund. And Totally Football Show European Edition will be out a little bit later on Monday with the thoughts of James and Jules and Alvaro on those Champions League semi-final first legs. We'll also be hearing how Leverkusen went and did it again. They were facing Stuttgart, one of the best sides in the Bundesliga. And 96th minute of the game, they are 2-1 down and finally going to lose for the first time this season. But of course they didn't. In the 97th minute, they get the equaliser, and that's now 46 matches. It is just insane. Standing in for the otherwise indisposed Raphael Honigstein to discuss all the German issues that you could wish. There's an English team still in Europe. It's Aston Villa, who host Olympiakos on Thursday in the Conference League semi-finals. That's going to be very exciting. Aston Villa coming off a 2-2 draw with Chelsea Saturday evening, in which they looked a little bit underwhelming. Is that fair? Having taken a two-goal lead, Unai Emery sitting back a little bit, is that right?
It's kind of, Unai does have a habit of doing this sometimes. He's very tactical and he's all about stopping the opposition. And he's more worried sometimes, I think, about the opponent than a lot of other coaches. And I think they definitely sat back here and allowed Chelsea to take the initiative. And credit to them, they outplayed Aston Villa in the second half. Which is not something they've done very well this year. I think I looked at the second half table after the Arsenal game and they were ranked 17th in the Premier League, Chelsea. So they're a team that's finished games really badly this season, but this was the other way around. They'll be delighted with the result, Chelsea, because...
Well, they didn't seem very delighted afterwards as they not marched off getting yellow cards here, there and everywhere.
Well, they should be delighted, and I'll tell you why, because they've won just one of their last 19 Premier League games against teams starting the day in the top four. They are rubbish against the very best.
Right.
The only win, by the way, is the Asterix win at Tottenham Hotspur, who had, seven players or something by the end of it.
Should they have won this game, do you think? Because it all the unhappiness at the end was the result of the disallowed goal from Axel De Sassi, which would have given them the 3-2 win, but then was called back because VAR spotted a foul by... Barishili on Carlos.
Yeah. Look, I know that myself and JJ would disagree on this. I thought it was a clear foul because the ball's in the air.
Right.
The player's about to sort of do something with it and then feels a knock in the back.
He gets barged in the back.
He gets barged in the back. It's not shoulder to shoulder. I think it's a clear off the ball foul that impacts that moment. It's not like it's at a corner where everything's a bit jostly.
Right.
This was something slightly different in my view.
I think that's correct. I also think it's not a foul. It doesn't feel like a foul, really. It's kind of... it should be done more refereeing on vibes. And I think it felt like that should just be fine. I mean, if you look at... Arsenal scored a goal earlier.
VAR should be vibe-assisted.
Most things should be. I think we should all be vibey. I think Ben White, for one of the goals that Arsenal scored yesterday on the 28th of April, dark times.
Nice.
He just barges into the goalie and pushes it back into the thing. So when he goes back to his starting position, he's like, oh, what's going on now? So you could argue that that might be a foul as well. I don't think that is, for what it's worth, but I don't think that is. I don't really think that is. But I also see why that is. Yeah.
Okay, well, they didn't give this goal, so...
I mean, Palmer had a great chance to score
before.
This felt like a real power outage game for Villa, and that does happen to Emery's teams. Their legs look like they'd gone.
How worried should they be about that? And the fact that they also lost Yuri Tielemans and Emi Martinez injury. I mean, Martinez was suspended
for
the first leg of the Olympiacos after his... penalty and ticks.
Olsen's quite away. I mean, everyone would be away off Martinez, but Olsen's quite the drop off.
And the presence. Not just like, I mean, obviously everything Martinez gives you, but they were trying to play exactly the same way. But without Martinez, it's really hard for them to do
it. You're playing that insane high line.
Exactly.
And you have somebody who reads it as well as Martinez.
That insane high line and also drawing opponents onto you. Like, they want to be pressed. They want it to look really hairy and get passes off just at the final moment. And that led to them conceding the first and almost conceding that third.
Wow. Olympiacos on Thursday. Olympiacos, of course, who are bidding to reach the final because it's played just down the road from them. It's going to be in Athens. They're from Piraeus. They also have a Europa League winning Spanish manager, or former Europa League. No, actually, the guy who won the last one, José Luis Mendilibar, who did it with Sevilla, bizarrely, last season. And he's now in charge. He's the third manager of this campaign. This weekend, they had a 4-1 win against Lamia. So that's nice. Anyway, that game's coming up on Thursday. Next up, let's get on to Everton and Sheffield United and all the goings on down the bottom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
In the EFL this weekend, it was the last day of the regular season in Leagues 1 and 2, Adrian. Mm. And also the penultimate weekend in the Championship. Let's see, quite a lot of things have been decided. Leicester's promotion, for example, back to the Premier League. This happened on Friday night after Leeds collapsed to a 4-0 defeat at QPR. Not sure if we know if they're going to have a points deduction awaiting them there in the Premier League, or
we don't know. But it feels like that might happen. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, what can we expect from Enzo Maresca's Foxes?
They need a new defence. Mm. Absolutely need a new defence. Wout Fasch is still there. Yannick Vestergaard is that's the first choice central defensive pairing that they would get annihilated in the Premier League. So they need to invest there. The rest of the team is good to watch. They've got two very exciting wingers, although one of them is on loan, Fatawu from Sporting Lisbon, really exciting young player. You've got Mavididi, who used to be at Arsenal as a kid. They've both got lots and lots of flair. Jamie Vardy's still the main man. He's still the main man. Keenan Dewsbury Hall. I mean, yep. We're hearing reports that Leicester, to balance the books, might have to cash in on somebody. And I think that might be Keenan Dewsbury Hall. He's a real talent. But look, I think that Leicester should fare better than your Burnleys or your Sheffield United. Mm. And they'll play attractive football. But for me, they need to learn lessons from Burnley, who have overplayed with players that aren't quite of Premier League standard. A little bit less of the overplaying at the back, and Leicester might just survive.
Burnley might stay up, Adrian.
They might.
Yeah, yeah. Right, indeed. Yeah, Before we get on to Burnley and their survival chances, quick mention for the second automatic promotion spot from the Championship, which is going to be decided next Saturday on the final day of the season. It's going to be either Leeds or Ipswich. Further down, Huddersfield, who were Championship playoff finalists 2 years ago, have just been almost mathematically relegated to League One. Derby, who a couple of years ago almost went out of business, have just gone back up to the Championship. Cheltenham got relegated to League Two. And Sutton, remember Sutton? Mm. Despite a 4-4 draw at MK Dons, got demoted back down to the National League.
Yeah, just a quick one on Derby. Paul Warne has had in his career as a manager four full seasons in League One. And he's been promoted in all four.
Good Lord.
Those seasons.
That's so pretty impressive.
He is the king of League One, Paul Warne. Derby fans have been moaning relentlessly about his style of play the whole season, but he's taken them up.
Let's talk about the Premier League and who is going to be going down from that. Everton and Brentford are safe, and Sheffield United are now definitely down after their 5-1 defeat at Newcastle. And you've got three teams in between them, Nottingham Forest, Luton and Burnley, still separated by just 2 points. Crikey, Burnley, Charlie suggests, are very much still in it. Two behind Nottingham Forest in 17th. Only one defeat, the Clarets, in their last eight. And so close to getting a victory at Old Trafford on Saturday afternoon. None of us actually saw this game because it wasn't on telly. Has anyone seen extensive enough highlights to formulate an opinion?
The opinion, yeah, I have watched it, extended highlights, and Burnley got kind of unlucky not to win.
Yeah.
Very open game, lots and lots of chances.
All exactly the same ones from all the other Man United games. Yeah, exactly. Same thing over and over again.
Yeah, rinse and repeat. There was one moment towards the end, I think it was Odegaard on the counter, and they didn't pick up, they kind of showed it on Match of the Day, the chance, but they didn't analyse it. And I wish that they had done, because as Odegaard breaks on the back four run back as you'd expect them to, and nobody else in the Manchester United side gets above the jog. And that, I'm afraid, is a shocking sign.
Think of the overload the other side when they win the ball back.
Honestly, they don't want to play. They don't want to push themselves. It is appalling. It's talent alone that's got them the draw here, you know, with Anthony. It was a good interception, nice goal.
What's his first Premier League goal of the season?
Only his second goal at Old Trafford as a United player against Arsenal, which was, I mean, feels like ages ago, doesn't it? It's crazy.
And appropriately, he celebrated by finding a cuddly toy, Sonic the Hedgehog, in the crowd and then pointing to it.
Was that, do you think, an improvised moment, or had a Sonic the Hedgehog been placed there?
Do you remember
Michel Antonio's cardboard cutout?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if there's some significance. Perhaps it was for some young relative of his that he wanted to salute.
Well, I think he's had, for the last year, he's had various video game characters ready to go.
Good Lord.
Sitting in the stands. I'm making this up. He's not going to be able to do them. He started with Sonic, he'll go through the hits after that.
Yeah. Okay, so are Burnley staying up? Do you want their remaining fixtures?
Yeah.
As they lie there, a point behind Luton and two behind Nottingham Forest. Burnley still have to host Newcastle, that's next weekend, then travel to Tottenham, then host Nottingham Forest,
So that, that's
the final day of the season then.
If they can keep it to 2 points as it is now,
it's
then
all they, comes
then
down
they've got
to
a playoff,
a
home game to beat Forest with one of the worst away record. I mean, their away record's been awful the 2 years they've been in the Premier League.
Based on that Forest performance today, like they've just like the power and the speed. I think the way Burnley would play against them, I can see that being a problem for Burnley.
Forest also have Sheffield United to play next week.
So that's a freebie, yeah.
But there's no doubt that Burnley are playing, they're in the best form.
Calmer as well,
three,
right? Because there's less expectation.
Do you know what? I think it's just a case of so few of their players this season had Premier League experience. Yeah. There were too many Premier League rookies in the same team. And it's taken them, as it might, you might expect, it's taken them two-thirds of a season to get used to it. And now they're used to it, they look like Premier League players.
Hmm. But is it too late? Chelsea's players still don't look like Premier League players.
What about Luton, if Burnley is still in it? What about Luton, who are actually a point better off and only a point behind Forest? They've still got to host Everton, who...
Winnable.
Because Everton are now mathematically safe. I think had one shot on target or something, did they? None in the first half against Brentford. So they host Everton, do Luton, then they're away at West Ham, and then they're home to Fulham. So, yeah, three teams effectively with not a huge amount to play for. Two and the Hammers, which...
Who knows? I mean, but they've got... I think more points can be accrued, I think, looking at those fixtures for all three, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Luton didn't get any points this weekend because they lost 2-1 away at a... I was going to say Pimpande, but a kind of... lively looking Wolves again. Some key players returning for Gary O'Neill, who's a figure that I have to say, listen, I don't know how you feel about Gary O'Neill, but pre-recording, he seemed to divide opinion here in the studio.
You did a little bit of earwig in there, weren't you? Yeah.
Why voices were raised on the subject.
I like Gary O'Neill.
And why do you like him?
I just think he's a smart guy. I think he's a really smart tactician. He's a bit of an innovator. He comes up with fresh ideas at Bournemouth and at Wolves. He's come up with some really clever things. And I think he's had to work with a threadbare squad for most of the season. He's lost a lot of his best players.
Yeah.
Pedro Neto, for instance, has missed half the season. Cunha's missed a big chunk of games. Yeah. Hwang. I think without considering those guys have missed so much, to see them where they are on the table, I think shows what a good manager he is. And by the way, before Arne Slot was sort of semi-anointed, earlier in the week, I was working on a radio show and we went through the odds. Gary O'Neill was about the fourth favourite for the Liverpool job.
Wow. Seriously?
Yes. So there's a lot of people out there that think that he is destined for that kind of arena. I think that's premature, but he was there for a reason.
So wait a minute. So what's JJ? What's your beef with Gary O'Neill?
I don't have any beef with Gary O'Neill. I think he seems like a really great coach.
Yeah,
I think
like
his
him.
Teams do have quite bad underlying numbers.
Yeah,
Bournemouth did as well.
What do they not do that you would like them to do?
Score more than they concede.
Okay,
is the basic of it.
There's old school, JJ.
Well, I'm quite an old school thinker.
Man, yeah.
It's probably a good segue onto Everton now, isn't it?
Well, we could well do that. I was going to mention Bournemouth actually because Wolves are doing brilliantly in 11th, but even better than them are Bournemouth with their tactical whiz of a manager.
Quite a good link to Gary O'Neill because he did that takedown of how he beat Bournemouth before. Like, I'll show you, you know. But then it took Raiola's players maybe half a season to figure out how to do the pressing properly and left some of them out that maybe aren't quite as good at it, and it makes them so much better. So that's really impressive what Bournemouth have done.
I mean, Bournemouth, over a prolonged period of time, they failed to win any of their opening 9 games. Since then, only 4 teams have taken more points than them.
Good Lord.
That's a big chunk of the season that they're 5th, basically. I mean, and at that point, the manager was really under pressure. Mm. I think it was like, you know, one defeat away from, certainly externally, there being a lot of talk that he should go. They've really turned it around. Been, so impressive.
Mm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. So a couple of other games this weekend, just to quickly mention, Everton did beat Brentford 1-0. That's now 3 wins in a row for Everton and their track-suited manager, Sean Dyche, and without conceding a single goal in any of them.
If Everton hadn't had that points deduction, they'd be level on points with Brighton, which is pretty good.
Mm, yeah.
And they play almost exactly the opposite kind of football that Brighton do as well. I think you look at pass combinations, there was this great article in The Athletic last week that Mark Carey did it.
and looking at the most common pass combinations in the league, or how you get the ball into the box, basically. Mm. And you see this, and it was like Odegaard and Saka constantly like best pals, and Everton is like Pickford and Calvert-Lewin or something like that. It works.
Honestly, I love it. The Everton-Liverpool game I loved because of such a clash of styles.
So old school, wasn't it?
It was so old school. And that's what I think about Leicester. Like, Leicester under Maresca aren't going to play like Everton, but they need to bring an element of Everton needs to come into every promoted side, in my opinion, because Premier League teams don't like defending that style. And I'm just amazed that more managers don't at least try and be physical and go direct.
I do wonder if, as well as just City being amazing, but the homogeneity of tactics now does facilitate getting like 90 plus points, because you don't have as many, you don't have those kind of wild card games. Like you're playing against much more similar systems than you used to before. I mean, Pochettino said something about that earlier this season, that everyone now plays far more similarly than when he came to the Premier League, and he could kind of disrupt with this really aggressive high press. So, like, you look at it, what are the games that start seeing, you're like, oh, City, that's going to be, that's a tough place to go. They're just massive lads,
like big fridge freezers, man marking everyone over the pitch is the antidote to like high pressing. Because if you try and get the ball out, if you can't get your own half, you need to be able to ping it up and hold it up. So if you have small technical players, can't really do that. But if you have a massive dude, then you can ping it up, hold it down, and go from there. Also, people just don't like playing against it, do they?
And it's why we like Luton. It's why every every neutral kind of likes Luton, because they're not the same as the other teams.
Yeah.
And it's, I think as fans, we want to see
variety,
clash of styles. Yeah, I like that. Totally.
Fulham 1, Crystal Palace 1 was the weekend's other game, which featured an absolutely cracking goal from Jeffrey Schlupp. And so Crystal Palace continued their recent unbeaten run. They've now picked up 10 points from the last 12. Oh, also from this, good chance to mention that Joachim Andersen, Crystal Palace defender, did a piece with the GQ this week in which he revealed that he's in a WhatsApp group with his teammates, Joel Ward and Will Hughes, and the WhatsApp group is called Coffee Talk. Says Joachim, or joking, we talk about everything, beans, machines, where to go to get the best coffee at away games.
I like it.
Proper beanheads.
Okay.
I guess so.
I mean, the game's gone.
You weren't doing that with Wrighty and the lads.
They should do a podcast. I reckon they should get some mics and drop that as a podcast. Coffee talk with Joachim and Anderson. Today we'll be talking about everything. Beans, machines. You'd listen, wouldn't you, listener? I mean, you'd listen to this, so there's a fair chance. Anyway... this is where today's edition of the Totally Football Show kind of runs out of road, because we've done all of the stuff and we'll be doing the stuff that's coming up in Tuesday's European edition, which is out actually late on Monday. So do give that a listen if you're so inclined. For now, join me in thanking Adrian Clark, JJ Bull, Charlie Eccleshare, producer Charlie Jones and Liam Warburton in the booth, and you, listener, whatever strange surname you have. Do hope you'll join us again soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.